Welcome to the weekend and this edition of the Florida Roundtable. Over the last many years, the focus on elections at the federal and state levels has intensified. Allegations of cheating or technical tampering have been nearly constant. I'm Bill Mick. Joining me today is Brevard County Supervisor of Elections, Tim Bobanek. We'll explore the state and local roles in elections and the impact of federal oversight or even requests when it comes to elections, down to voter roll maintenance and the like. We'll also look at redistricting of congressional seats. In the news recently, with the states considering unconventional adjustments and how those adjustments, if they would come about, impact your local elections offices. The logistics of elections from various perspectives this week on the Florida Roundtable from the Florida News Network. Thanks for joining us. We continue in moments.
Quality Green Specialists has the plants, products, and friendly expert advice to keep your garden healthy and bountiful. Quality Green has thousands of plants, trees, flowers, herbs, vegetables, and more. Plus, high-quality organic-based fertilizers, products, even comprehensive soil testing. Visit DLand's beautiful nursery and fine fertilizer store. Conveniently open 9 to 4 daily. Located at 335 West Michigan Avenue. QualityGreenSpecialist.com. Top quality plants, sustainable gardening products, friendly expert advice.
Do you have an invention idea but don't know what to do next? Call InventHelp today. We have representatives nationwide who will explain the InventHelp process step by step. Over 10,000 patents have been secured through InventHelp's patent referral services. The InventHelp data bank includes thousands of companies who have agreed to review new ideas. We've been helping inventors since 1984. Let's help you next. Get started today.
Call us for free information at 1-800-558-5497. Again, 1-800-558-5497.
Nothing's better than taking to Florida's waterways with family and friends. But some boat operators don't realize that bow riding is extremely dangerous. It can lead to tragic accidents if someone falls overboard because of speed or direction changes. Be sure your passengers sit only in manufacturer-designated areas while underway. Their safety is your responsibility. Safe boating is no accident. To learn more, visit the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission at myfwc.com.
You work hard to provide a better life for your family. The only problem is that you now have a tax bill that you can't afford to pay. The IRS is now threatening to garnish your wages and put a levy on your bank account. You can't ignore the IRS. They won't go away on their own. You need help, and you need it now. Call the Tax Pros at United Tax Fix today. Call 800-762-2768. That's 800-762-2768.
Nice to have you with us this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. I'm Bill Mick. You can catch up with me and our podcast at BillMick.com. Our guest today, Brevard County Supervisor of Elections, Tim Bobanek. Tim, thanks for taking the time. Good to see you, my friend.
It's always a pleasure to be on with you, Bill.
Let's talk a little bit about your history. For those around the state who may not know you, you're not new to elections. You were appointed Supervisor of Elections when your predecessor retired. Then you were elected to the term that you're in now. So you've been as the supervisor, 4 years? Pretty close now.
So I was appointed in 2022, in October of 22, by Governor DeSantis, like you said, to fill the remainder of the term of Lori Scott, who had retired, and then was subsequently elected in 2024. So, you know, I'm in the beginning of my first official term as the elected supervisor, but I'm not a stranger to elections.
Yeah, you worked in elections before you came to Brevard County, and you spent, 14 years in the office before you assumed the top job?
Right. So I was actually, I started in elections in 2009 in Hillsborough County as the IT director over there.
Okay.
And then in 2013, came over here to work for Lori Scott as her IT director. And so I've been there, been around since 2009, and including these recent special elections now, just ticked off my 36th election.
Okay, they do mount up, don't they?
They do.
It's interesting because you might have been the IT guy for all of those years, but people who work in elections work more than their role, and especially when you have election day and all the events that lead up to it and then afterwards.
Right, and the IT director is a unique role in the office because you have to be an expert at almost everything in the office in order to be able to support the systems, you know, whether it's the voter registration system, tabulation, you know, candidate finance, you name it. You know, you have to be able to support, you know, all of the functions in the office. So it gave me a lot of great experience to prepare for the role that I'm in now.
Let's talk just briefly about elections operations in a non-election season. Right now, we're kind of in a lull, other than the places who are currently having special elections. Our special elections in our region happened earlier in the spring.
Right. I was just going to say, we haven't had an off cycle. We just hit our off cycle now, thanks to the special elections that we just wrapped up. And so now we're really focusing on our voter roll list maintenance. Federal law prohibits us from doing, you know, any kind of voter roll list maintenance within 90 days of a federal election. So that kind of really takes us out of the picture during the even years. And so now this is the time where we do various types of voter roll list maintenance. We've just completed two different processes. The first one we actually did earlier in the year, which was we compared our voter rolls to the National Change of Address database with the U.S. Postal Service.
Okay.
And we basically send the entire voter roll, we download it, we compare it to that list, and then it kicks back of, here's everybody who whose address, according to the post office, has changed versus what we have. And then we send out mailers to these voters, or we update their addresses based upon changes they submitted to the U.S. Postal Service.
Mm-hmm.
That's one aspect of it. And then the other aspect of it is we will send a notice, what we call a final notice, to voters who have not had any activity or any participation in the last two general election cycles. So they've had no activity whatsoever. We send them a notice saying that you have 30 days to respond to this notice. And if you don't respond, then your voter record will go inactive. Now you will,
and
still,
that's the address on file in your office.
That's the address on file.
Right.
So a lot of times those will come back, and we'll get the little yellow sticky undeliverable notices on the on the mailers telling us, hey, here's a new address for the voter, or they moved out of state, mm-hmm. or anything. And so then we
not always at the top of a voter's mind.
No.
Ooh, I've got to notify the elections office that I've moved or that I'm leaving the state or anything else. They'll go to a new state and register, not even think about having not taken care of business here.
The supervisor of elections is the last one anybody thinks of updating their information. And we right. see that just when we run that national change of address comparison. You know, Brevard's got 425,000-430,000 registered voters right now, and we might get 10,000 to 15,000 returned address changes just on a single run.
Wow.
So it really depends on the time of year, how long it's been, you know, especially when we're coming off of an even year where we haven't been able to run it all year and do any kind of a cleanup.
Yeah, very true. And your offices are busy with other things all the time, too. Got about 15 seconds here. Petition gathering going on as soon as the previous election's over. They're trying to get lined up for the next election where we'll vote on those things.
They are. There's a lot of aggressive petition processing going on right now.
And we continue with Brevard Supervisor of Elections Tim Bobanek in moments on the Roundtable.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-340-5510. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-340-5510. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-340-5510.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Hello, I'm Hector Elizondo, Emmy Award-winning actor, and I want to talk to you about getting older. My body hurts, my joints ache, and sometimes I forget.
I forget that doing all your own scenes for a movie isn't always the best decision. Especially when you're galloping side saddle down a countryside road on a horse named Archibello, who seems to have only one speed, high. And pulling on his reins only seems to encourage him to go even faster. So, of course, my body hurts and my joints ache, but it's not because of my age. It's because I'm living my life. Oh, Archibello!
Don't let life pass you by. Take care of your brain health. It may just help you stay on top of your game.
As soon as this scene wraps, I'm going to kiss the ground, thank Archibello for his outstanding performance, feed him a carrot, and visit brainhealth.gov.
Find out how you can make the most of your brain as you age at brainhealth.gov.
talking election issues, federal and state, here on the roundtable this weekend. I'm Bill Mick, along with us, Brevard County Supervisor of Elections, Tim Bobanek. Tim, we were talking about the actions in not just your office, but in all 67 supervisors' offices across the state. Year-round, every year, major elections or not, you've got business going on. We talked about petition gathering and that type of thing. What other kinds of things are these supervisors' offices involved in day-to-day without an election immediately in play?
Well, in the odd years, this is the year that most of the supervisors will perform any kind of maintenance, upgrades, you name it, that you really can't do when you're so busy in an election year. In Brevard County here, we just received all new voting equipment that we are doing acceptance testing and processing. You know, our equipment was 12 years old, and there's a number of other counties that are doing something similar, where they're upgrading their voting equipment, they're updating their voter check-in systems, you know, performing even like server upgrades and system upgrades within their office, things that it's just very difficult to do when you have an active election going on.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Those things naturally are intensified, and the work in your office is intensified with a major election going on. You've got candidates trying to qualify. You've got a lot of folks who claim to know the rules but don't understand how that all works, trying to get candidates eligible to run. And you've got people dealing with all of that all the time.
Right, and we are starting to see candidates file not only for next year for the 2026 election, but in Brevard here, we have a municipal and special district in November, and so those city candidates are starting to announce. And, you know, that election for us is smaller, but, you know, a lot of the other counties across the state, they do have multiple elections throughout the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like we are just in a roll of special elections across the state. Mm-hmm. You know, it started with President Trump appointing various elected officials to his cabinet in various positions, and that kind of starts a whole chain reaction of
sure.
resignations, and I want to run for this other office. And so, you know, we're seeing, you know, I think two or three of the seats are having special elections in other counties right now in the state.
Yeah, we just saw an incident in Orange County where they'd sent out some sample ballots and had the wrong candidate's name as the Democratic winner. Now, the conspiracy theorists can sit down on this one. It's a Democrat supervisor of elections. It's a human error. This is a human process. And I guess like Major League Baseball and the NFL, we want perfection out of the officials when it doesn't necessarily happen with the players all the time. There are going to be errors happen. The key is having the integrity to correct them. The Orange County office owned this. They sent out replacement ballots or are sending them out. And it wasn't a regular ballot, thank God.
No, after 16 years, you know, I've certainly had plenty of issues and mistakes in my time, and so I definitely feel for them and that new supervisor over there. But it's going to happen. It's a lesson. But I think that that supervisor did exactly what they should have done, and that is step up and just own the mistake and move on.
You know, interesting that it's a partisan elected position, but it's a position that demands the office act in a nonpartisan way.
Exactly. And that's, you know, all of us, we really do run our offices in a very nonpartisan way. And it's funny because I get asked all the time, hey, would you support my candidacy? Would you come to my fundraiser and so forth? And I always am very appreciative but respectfully decline. And I remind them, I said, how would you feel if I was going to your opponent's fundraiser or supporting your opponent? Would you, you know, still have faith in the election process? So we are very nonpartisan. We don't take any sides on any candidates or issues on the ballot.
You know, there has been a focus on elections since 2016, probably before, but it intensified in 2016 and beyond, even to the point things that are going on today. One of the things being kicked around is the list maintenance that you mentioned that your offices are engaged in all the time. But now we've got a request from the federal government, the Department of Justice, saying we're going to go to these states, we're going to ask them for their list maintenance and what their voter rolls are. And in some cases, it's against the law for the elections officials to hand that information over to the state. There are some states that won't allow that to occur. Where do we stand on that in Florida?
So in Florida, we have some of the most broad public record requests in the nation. And so anybody can request the entire copy of the voter rolls here in Florida for little to no cost at all. The only things that are exempt from our voter roll public record release is your driver's license, your last four of your Social Security number, your signature, and where you registered to vote. But pretty much everything else is public record, and mm-hmm. we get requests all the time for that data. The state puts out a monthly CD that has all of the Florida voters on it that a number of people get automatically every month. And so, you know, when the DOJ reached out to Florida and asked for that data, it was a very simple, okay, here you go. Here's the entire voter rolls.
Now, hopefully they did that through the Secretary of State's office where those state records are maintained rather than all 67 counties. I can't imagine the nightmare that might be.
No, it was much easier to get a single source at the Department of State Division of Elections, and they handed it over. They've not reached out to my office or to any other offices that I'm aware of within the state of Florida.
As you saw this unfold, did it appear to you that this is a verification request, or is it an attempt at directing how states do this kind of work?
At my first glance, seems to be they want to make sure that the states are complying with the federal list maintenance laws. So federal law does mandate that every state has to perform a minimum standards of list maintenance, you know, removing deceased voters, removing, you know, felons from the voter rolls, looking for duplicate registrations, things like that. Things that Florida's been doing for many, many years, and I think that they're attempting to reach out to all 50 states. And they are reaching out to all 50 states. They have confirmed that. And they want to see how they're complying with that. They want to show demonstrable, you know, evidence that they're doing that.
As these things occur, you find somebody on a list that doesn't belong there, or you believe they don't, and it can be a long verification process. How long does that take to remove someone who needs to be removed? Maybe they're deceased, the family didn't notify you, which is, again, not the first thing in a family's mind when they've lost a loved one.
Right. And you know, you want to make it difficult, you know, for somebody to be removed from the voter rolls. You don't want to do that just willy-nilly. You want to make sure that you have your I's dotted, your T's crossed, and that you are removing the right person. So there's only a couple cases where a voter immediately comes off the voter rolls, and that's typically when you have a deceased voter. You know, we get that information in Florida directly from the Department of State, from the Social Security Death Database, and they're very good with that. I can tell you it was yesterday was 2 years to the day that I actually lost my father, and it was on a Saturday, and by Monday or Tuesday, I went into the Hillsborough Elections Office with my mother, and my dad had already been removed from the voter rolls. They had already received notification from him. So Florida's very on top of that. In addition to what we get from the state, recent law changes mandate that the clerk of courts have to send weekly reports to the supervisors of elections for deceased records, voters convicted of felonies, voters deemed mentally incapacitated, and also voters who get out of jury duty under the excuse of I'm not a citizen. You know, we check all
of
those lists.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
So we get all of those lists. Now, the funny thing is a lot of times, most of the time, if we do find somebody in the voter rolls, they are a citizen, and they're just lying a little bit to get out of jury duty.
Do you then report that back to the courts?
Absolutely.
The things people will think of, try to avoid jury duty. So with that process of removal, you have voters who are inactive, or you have, as you mentioned, a convicted felon. That's not automatically done either. There's a process to that.
There is. So when we get notice of somebody that's convicted of a felony, our first requirement is that we send them notice. We say, hey, we have received information that you are a convicted felon, and we give them an opportunity to schedule a hearing with the office if they dispute those claims. They can come in, they can plead their case, they can bring in documentation. And we've had voters come in and do that process, go through it, and you know, maybe what we got from the state was a little outdated. They can come in and show, no, hey, I did pay my fines and fees, or I just had a recent
judgment. Because that's all a requirement to get your rights back after a felony conviction.
Right. It is not just when you complete the terms of your sentence. You have to pay all the fines and fees. And now, that's Florida. That could be very widely across all other states. And when Florida, if you have a convicted felon in another state who then moves into Florida, if they've completed all of the terms that the other state requires, then Florida honors whatever the other terms are. But if you get convicted of the felony in Florida, you have to follow Florida's rules. So once we send that notice out, if it comes back undeliverable or if they don't respond, then we publish their names on a public notice website, you know, portion on our website. And then if 30 days go by, they don't respond, then we can remove them. And we'll send a notice saying that you have been officially removed from the voter rolls.
So this still requires the eyes of somebody in your office on this kind of stuff all the time. And that's repeated across all 67 counties.
It is. I have two dedicated staff that work full time on just felon, mentally incapacitated citizens, you know, the high-end voter roll list maintenance tasks that we have to do, because it is a constant rolling series of data dumps that we get from the state.
People come in and register every day.
They do.
People leave every day and don't necessarily tell you.
Exactly. So my staff definitely has to do their homework. You don't want to inadvertently remove the wrong person. We've had situations where we've actually had deceased voters who are not deceased. Famously, one of them was my canvassing
board. That's an interesting phrase. Deceased voters who aren't deceased.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we call them Lazarus in my office.
Okay, I like it. Yeah.
And it was my canvassing board attorney, and it was a nursing home that made a mistake on somebody who had passed away. They put one wrong number on a digit on a death certificate, and so it was showing up as him being deceased. And it really caused him a nightmare.
Did you tell him you didn't have to pay him for that day then?
No, unfortunately, I still got the bill.
Didn't work that way, huh? Let me ask you, you mentioned non-citizens, and there's controversy across the country about illegals coming into the country and then registering and voting. How easy is that in Florida? And then if you find a non-citizen on the rolls, what's the process there?
So right now we're receiving non-citizen notifications or potentially non-citizens from the Department of State, or if we come across any records ourselves during any of our other research. And I would say the vast majority, it's if somebody doesn't realize that they're checking the wrong box or doesn't realize what the laws are in Florida. If we do have somebody that we find that is a non-citizen and we show any evidence of them voting, we do return that over to, in Florida, we have the Office of Election Crimes and Security, mm-hmm. and it'll be turned over to them, and they're the ones who decide any kind of prosecution that goes on. Most recently, the Trump administration opened up access to the SAVE database, which is kind of there's a little bit of misunderstanding about what is in the SAVE database. It is not a database of every U.S. citizen in the country.
Okay.
It is a database of voters who have gone through the citizenship process and become naturalized citizens and those who are in the process. But Bill, if you've never done that, you wouldn't necessarily be in the SAVE database.
Right.
But you were born here, you're a U.S. citizen,
right,
and so forth. So it's not the end-all be-all. It is certainly an extra tool that we have now in our toolbox to do research. And mm-hmm. just this past week, we had a report. We had a case that came down from the Department of State. It was a suspected non-citizen in the voter rolls. And when we did the research and used the tools in the SAVE database, the voter had gotten married, had changed their name, and the married name, they were a citizen. So this is why I have to have these staff members really look at every one of these instances to make sure that we're not taking somebody off the rolls.
An investigative tactic or two going into that to make sure, because the last thing an elections office wants to do is take somebody's right to vote away.
Absolutely.
That makes sense. Supervisor of Elections from Brevard County, Tim Bobanek, with us this weekend on the Roundtable. We're glad you are as well.
Florida is kayaking country. Kayaks are a great vessel for exploring the state's beautiful waterways, but it's important to be prepared for the journey, regardless of your experience level. Get your boater education and learn about you and your craft's abilities. It'll help you have a safer, more enjoyable time on the water. Before you go, know your limits and always wear your life jacket. Safe boating is no accident. To learn more, visit the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission at myfwc.com.
Do you have an invention idea but don't know what to do next? Call InventHelp today. We have representatives nationwide who will explain the InventHelp process step by step. Over 10,000 patents have been secured through InventHelp's patent referral services. The InventHelp data bank includes thousands of companies who have agreed to review new ideas. We've been helping inventors since 1984. Let's help you next. Get started today.
Call us for free information at 1-800-558-5497. Again, 1-800-558-5497.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. Growing up with a brother with autism, Sarah Cronk witnessed firsthand how kids with disabilities felt left out by their peers. It's why at the age of 15, Sarah approached her cheerleading coach with an idea to include girls with disabilities on her school's cheer team. Well, what started out as an inclusive high school cheer team in a small town in Iowa has led to what is now known as Sparkle Effect, a thriving nonprofit with over 180 cheer teams across the United States, bringing students with and without disabilities together through cheerleading. The result? More confidence, higher grades, and better school attendance for kids with disabilities. And for those without a disability, new friends and a greater empathy. You want to learn more? Well, visit disabilitycampaign.org, where we have posted a link to the fabulous work known as the Sparkle Effect.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late. We stay informed. We invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united. Stand with us in caring for our veterans.
Imagine. Imagine being denied an apartment because of your religion, or your race, or because you have children, or a disability.
It's so wrong.
Yes, but who has the power to stop this?
You do. Each of us has the power. The law is on your side. It's illegal for landlords to discriminate because of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, disability, or familial status. If you suspect that you have experienced housing discrimination, file a complaint with HUD immediately so we can investigate it. Fair housing is your right.
Use it.
To learn more, visit hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Or call 1-800-669-9777. 1-800-669-9777. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Bill Mick with you this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. Joining us is Tim Bobanek. He is Brevard County Supervisor of Elections. Tim, we were talking about voter roll, list maintenance, and those types of things, and taking those who shouldn't be on the rolls off of it. Has motor voter been a help or a hindrance when it comes to maybe illegals getting a voter information card and being registered to vote, and or does it help in any way?
Actually, it helps tremendously because in Florida, the DMV, that responsibility is down to the tax collectors. And, you know, I have spoken at length with our wonderful tax collector, Lisa Cullen, here in Brevard County. So when you go in to get your driver's license because of the Real ID Act, you are required to bring in all of your documentation showing your citizenship status. Mm-hmm. Now, it is true that a non-citizen is perfectly legal able to get a driver's license. It is no problem. You, as a non-citizen, you can get a driver's license. Mm-hmm. However, when you go into that motor vehicle office and you present that information, if you are not a citizen, then their systems will not let you register to vote. It'll stop it at that point. So the motor
voters.
I'm not
sure that the people around the country are aware that those kind of systems exist.
They are. Those protections are in place. And I've confirmed that again with our tax collector that if you tried, if you come in and if you have a naturalization paperwork, or let's say you're an immigrant, and that database does distinguish the citizens from the immigrants and non-immigrants, they don't have the ability to register to vote in those tax collectors or those DMV offices. We won't get that data. The system will stop them from registering, but they can still get a driver's license, and that's what's important to understand. Is that they do have the ability to do that.
I know you attend national conferences from time to time where other supervisors from around the country get together, whatever that position may be called in another state. Are those types of protections available pretty generally across the country or not?
Well, you know, Florida led the way when it came to the Real ID Act implementation and compliance. You know, I think we were one of the first states to jump on it. And I don't know that every single state is still fully up and running on the Real ID compliance. I know that the airlines have finally put the foot down and says you have to have a Real ID compliant ID to board a plane. Mm-hmm. They put that off for many years, but this year they finally implemented
it. Yeah, that was supposed to happen a decade or so ago.
It was, and they finally implemented it, and I just flew recently, so I mean I saw the warnings that are at the airport saying if you don't have a Real ID, you're not going to get on this plane. So I think that there's some states still getting caught up on it, but for the most part, I do feel comfortable that people going into a DMV or a motor voter because of that Real ID Act, that's kind of a good stopgap right there that's preventing those non-citizens from coming on.
One of the things that we've seen previously in Brevard, we've seen it and heard complaints about it around the country, is people voting in multiple states in national elections. What's the process for double checking to make sure somebody is not registered in another state or otherwise ineligible to vote?
Well, honestly, Bill, there's not a really good process in place right now.
Wow.
A couple of years ago, Florida was a member of a program called ERIC, Electronic Registration Information Center, and it was a consortium of about 25, 30 states that were all sharing their voter rolls together and comparing them and looking for
people.
But
no nationwide system for
doing it. Nationwide system.
Okay.
There is no federal database for voting or elections. So it was a group of states that put this together. Now, it was a number of the Republican states ended up getting out because there was accusations of other partisan issues that they didn't like. One of the things that was a big trigger is that to be a member of ERIC, that state had to send out mailers to unregistered but potentially eligible voters. So it was trying to reach out to unregistered voters.
And so it membership mandated voter outreach.
It mandated voter outreach.
Which is mandated for you in state law anyway,
right.
Is it not?
We do it anyway as well.
Yeah.
But there was accusations of it leaning a certain way. And so most of the Republican states withdrew out of that within the last year or two.
Was that detrimental to your office's efforts?
Well, I will tell you that when we were members, we got really, really good information from that system.
Mm-hmm.
And it is slowly being replaced with alternates. It's going to take a little while to build up. There's a new...
It's like app creation, and somebody creates one, and all of a sudden something goes wrong. There are 12 people waiting to replace it, but they haven't got it yet.
Right. And so, you know, Alabama created something called AVID, which is the Alabama Voter Integrity Database. And it includes Alabama and 10 other southern states. And mm-hmm. Florida's a member of that. And they've started comparing voter rolls and going that. But one of the other...
Still leaves you 39 states you're not checking.
Exactly. So
wow.
As more states... So what you have now is you have competing systems between ERIC and the AVID system.
So instead of one system, you could have 10 or 12 and to be accurate, you're going to have to be a member of all of them.
Exactly. And Florida's only a member of the AVID right now.
Mm-hmm.
But we have started receiving. There's one good thing, again, back to the DMV that we are getting, and that is when a voter goes to another state, let's say they're a registered voter in Florida, they have a Florida driver's license. When they go to another state, if they get a driver's license in that state, we are now getting notified. The DMVs are all talking to each other, and we are getting notified when that voter gets that, and that enables us to cancel their voter registration, because if they get a driver's license in another state, then that implies they are a resident of that state now and no longer a resident of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So every week we get data dumps from the Department of State and the DHS-MV database of voters who received a driver's license in another state. So that's an additional tool in our toolbox now.
We started this part of the conversation talking about the federal government asking for all of this information, which by Florida law they're able to get. What are the differences or the additional burdens from Florida law or federal law that changes or makes your job more difficult?
You know, most of there's overall general federal laws that govern elections, but everything is really state run. It is very independent of the federal government. There is no, there's always concern about federal overreach and how much you want the federal government to be involved in the state-run elections.
Sure.
And that's where this administration is really getting involved in analyzing what all of these states are doing, how they're conducting elections.
So you see this as a compliance check, not a try to an effort to force states to do things a certain way?
Yet to be seen.
Okay.
I honestly don't know, because in some of the states, they're asking for more than just the voter rolls. In Colorado, the DOJ has asked for every single document, every single record, not only for the voter rolls, but for everything with the 2024 and the 2020 elections, any records they have on file whatsoever. I mean,
did they give justification for why they want those or the reason they're seeking?
Not at this point. And so I think some of these states, you know, Florida only was asked for the voter rolls, as far as I know. And that's what most of the states are. And they've been usually targeting the state level. They've not gone down to an individual county level. The only difference on that is in California, the DOJ has requested from specific counties, LA County, San Francisco County, Orange. So they've actually gone down to some, but those are massive counties that are
sure.
Some of those counties are bigger than most of the states in Florida.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that could be just a load of information that'll take forever for somebody to go through.
And that's the thing, you know, the amount of data that they are receiving and what they're doing with this is the big mystery right now. And you're talking just in Florida, millions of voter records, you know, is kind of looking at that. Florida, you know, we document everything very well. We have reports that we have to run biannually to show how many voters that we've removed for all these different various reasons. You know, just in Brevard County alone, we removed over 50,000 voters since January 1st of 2024. And that's for inactivity, for felony convictions, deceased voters, you name it. I mean, Florida's very aggressive with it. And I think that's the concern that this administration has, is that there's some states that are not being as compliant and they have, you know, bloated voter rolls is one of the accusations.
For years, there was a big push for early voting and for mail balloting. And it was driven hard to the voter. Here are your alternatives. Here's other ways for you to vote. And then 2020, President Trump and his reelection attempt then poo-pooed mail balloting. There were others who jumped on it. And then the Florida legislature crafts a law that says, instead of being for a couple of election cycles, that a voter has to request a mail ballot in every election cycle. What did that do to the mail ballot rolls as far as you've seen in Brevard?
So now a mail ballot request is only good for a single election cycle. So like right now, we're in an odd year. If you request a mail ballot, it's good for all elections through the end of 2026. But then after that, you have to re-request your ballot again. So when we started on earlier this year, January 1st, we went from over 100,000 mail ballot requests that we had in 24 to zero. And we've had to build that list now back up again, do voter outreach to make sure that voters are aware of this. You know,
because not everybody's plugged into what's going on politically or in elections. They think about it when they start hearing and seeing ads about elections.
Exactly. And we saw the same thing in 22. You know, that same reset happened at the end of 2022. We started 23 with zero mail ballot requests. And, you know, it took a lot of work to build it up. A lot of outside entities were all trying to get the message out. And you know, in my office, we don't promote one method of voting or the other.
Right.
We promote making you aware of all three methods.
How bad did it hit the numbers? What are you back to, say, right now as you look at these?
Well, we actually got a little bit of a bump because of the special elections that we had.
That makes some
sense. So, you know, we might be up to 40, 50,000 possibly. I'd have to go check my office.
But not the 100 that you had when the list was ongoing. And you can't ask on the mail ballot envelope, do you want us to continue this like you used to be able to?
The legislature changed that as well.
Sounds like somebody went after mail voting and hit it pretty hard. Other ground to cover when we continue in moments right here on the Florida Roundtable.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. At Private Healthcare, we provide the peace of mind you deserve. With Private Healthcare, you'll get the coverage you want and healthcare you need. If your employer doesn't supply healthcare coverage and you don't qualify for Medicare or Medicaid, you need to give us a call right now. Private Healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. When life comes at you unexpectedly, you need to be ready. And health insurance is your financial safety net. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-961-1527. That's 800-961-1527. 800-961-1527.
You are carded to provide a better life for your family. The only problem is that you now have a tax bill that you can't afford to pay. The IRS is now threatening to garnish your wages and put a levy on your bank account. You can't ignore the IRS. They won't go away on their own. You need help, and you need it now. Give us a call now, and we'll create a plan of action for you that we guarantee will work. Stop the harassing phone calls. Stop the threatening letters. Stop wage garnishments. Stop any bank levies. And most importantly, put an end to your tax nightmare once and for all. If you have a tax debt of $10,000 or more, call the Tax Pros at United Tax Fix today. Representatives are standing by to assist you. Call 800-762-2768. That's 800-762-2768. 800-762-2768. Call now.
Continuing on the Florida Roundtable, Supervisor of Elections Tim Bobanek from Brevard County joining me here on the Florida News Network. Thank you for taking your time spending with us as well. Tim, one of the things that's come up recently, Texas being the forefront of this, is the idea of redistricting congressional seats. And again, political motivations is what it seems to be, to impact the numbers and who's in control of the legislature, of the Congress in Washington, D.C. We do this every 10 years. We do it after the census. How complex a process is that when redistricting happens?
So in this case, the governor's called for a redistricting of just the congressional districts right now. Mm-hmm. Normally in a redistricting year, we're dealing with congressional, House, Senate, school board, cities will sometimes redistrict. And so we're taking
county
all
commissions,
of those county
thing.
Commissions, exactly, yeah. All of that, and we're looking at that. In this case, they're only going to be looking at congressional districts. And here in Brevard County, we are wholly contained in one single congressional district.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Speaker Perez up in the House, Speaker, has stated that he's putting together a select committee on redistricting to start looking into this process for the upcoming legislative session. And so we're keeping a close eye on this, especially the timing of it, because, you know.
Well, these congressmen, these people in the U.S. House of Representatives, they're due up for election in November of 2026, which means if they're not preparing for their election now, they're behind the curve.
Right.
And if the districts change, there could be new people getting in, primary challenges potentially, but certainly as areas change on a district, it opens it up to other people to be part of it.
It does. And you also have the potential of somebody being drawn out of a district, or you suddenly have two Congress.
Of course, you don't have to live
members.
In a district to serve in Congress. In the Florida House, in the Florida Senate, it would be.
That is the only. That required. Is the one exception, is that yeah. In Congress, you do not have to live in the district that you represent.
Yeah.
So it really could open up for a lot of interesting possibilities. You know, our office, the timelines will be the same, because in a redistricting year, the legislature would meet in January. They'll do that early session. They'll vote on it, get that census data, and then we'll have to do a rapid turnaround, see what kind of changes that we have, and if anything could change, whether it's the shape of the congressional district, we could go from one to two districts. You have some counties that can have like four or five congressional districts.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever that happens, we then have to redraw the precinct boundaries to match up with the new district lines.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want a precinct crossing over a congressional district as much as you can help it, because we have to report results by congressional district.
Okay.
And our lowest level of reporting is a precinct. So if you have a congressional line that goes through a precinct, that makes it extremely difficult.
So you've got to draw those lines around that particular precinct,
exactly,
in order to make sure it's right.
Exactly. So we got to make
sure. What's it take
for
your staff? Does your staff do it, or is this drawn by lawmakers?
So the actual districts are drawn by lawmakers, and then we will receive what we call shape files, which is a geographic information system term that then we will load into our mapping software. So we'll put that new district down on the map, and then we will see where our precinct lines cross over, and then we will make the necessary adjustments to the precinct.
So by law, you're allowed to make those adjustments to
yes.
make a precinct wholly in a district.
Correct. And the census, what they have to do, the legislature, they will send us the data, and they will redistrict using census blocks.
Okay.
That's the lowest level they have. So they have the census data, that is the number of physical people that are in each census block, and then they will build these congressional districts by census blocks. We have to follow, and the precinct lines, the same block boundaries, unless that block, you know, is split by a river or a natural body of water or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, we've got to follow the census blocks as well. So we just take these pieces and we build the new precincts around them.
I never thought I'd need to use the phrase lowest common denominator again in my life, but that's what you're doing.
That it really is.
Yeah.
And, you know, redistricting is a term that is used that the legislature does. And the supervisors of elections, we do reprecincting.
Okay.
And that's just what we, that's our reactionary mechanism to the redistricting process. That's what we have to do to comply with the.
How long will it take your office typically once you start the process to redraw all of this stuff?
I'm cautiously optimistic because we're only dealing with the congressional boundaries and no other boundaries are changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Brevard stays in a single congressional district, then we wouldn't have to change anything.
Nothing to do. Yeah.
Except if they change the district number. If they renumber the districts and they change our district number, it's no change as far as precincts go, but I still then have to mail voter information
Report cards to every single voter.
And yeah. That's one thing that's interesting. All of the supervisors of elections across the state of Florida have already turned our budgets into our county commissions.
Right.
All of that happened, and then the redistricting announcement came. So I'm not aware of a single supervisor who has, you know, countywide
money
voter
set aside,
cards
waiting
set aside
to be spent. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I can see it. And it's not a typical redistricting. They don't have a new census to work off of.
No, they're using the exact same data as the 2020 census.
We'll talk more about it as we wrap up the Florida Roundtable on this weekend. Nice to have you with us on the Florida News Network.
I love the ocean.
Me? I love a slow, winding river.
I love the lake. Slick as glass.
But nothing compares to what you love inside the boat.
My family.
My child.
My best friend from first grade.
If you're behind the wheel of a boat, pay attention. That way your favorite water will always be safe water. Learn more about boating safety at myfwc.com. Brought to you by the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
You work hard to provide a better life for your family. The only problem is that you now have a tax bill that you can't afford to pay. The IRS is now threatening to garnish your wages and put a levy on your bank account. You can't ignore the IRS. They won't go away on their own. You need help. And you need it now. Call the tax pros at United Tax Fix today. Call 800-762-2768. That's 800-762-2768.
Stop your grinding with Brooks Nygaard.
Are you waking up in the morning with a sore jaw, headaches, ringing in your ears, all because you're grinding and clenching your teeth at night? That's exactly what was going on with me. I ended up going to a dentist, and he wants to charge over $600 for a night guard. That's when I found the Brooks Night Guard. You mold it at home to the top or bottom teeth. Other mouth guards go all the way to the back, which allows the back teeth to touch. This is where most of the grinding and clenching occurs. The Brooks Night Guard redirects the bite force away from the back teeth, reducing jaw pain while still protecting the teeth. This unique design is what makes Brooks Night Guard different from all other traditional grind guards. Order your Brooks Night Guard today and get 10% off plus free shipping. Go to BrooksNightGuard.com and enter the code Brooks95. That's BRUX95.
Stop your grinding with Brooks Night Guard.
Shortness of breath, patient's confused. Temp 102.
He just had an infection. What's going on?
He's becoming septic.
Antibiotics started. Bed ready. Let's move him.
Infections can lead to a deadly chain reaction in your body called sepsis. Very quickly, sepsis can cause tissue damage, organ failure, and even death. If you know the risks, can spot the symptoms, and act fast, then you can get ahead of sepsis. Learn more at cdc.gov/sepsis.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestrol.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Wrapping up the Florida Roundtable for this weekend, Supervisor of Elections in Brevard County, Tim Bobanek, with us. Tim, we were talking this idea of redistricting, and Texas basically got that ball rolling. It's caught fire across the country in Republican-led states anyway. Democrat-led states are saying, hey, we're going to fight this. We're going to redistrict ourselves. Is it lawful in Florida for this redistricting to take place in this fashion
based on what you know? My research says I'm not sure they can do it.
So not being a lawyer, so not giving legal advice, that's the question to be answered. And no matter what happens, you know, there's certainly going to be litigation to follow. So I think
Boy, isn't that the truth. Everything that happens, there's litigation.
Exactly. And so I think that Florida's going to see what happens in Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, right now the speaker's just announced the creation of the committee and the governor's intent to do this. And having Texas go first, I think, is going to, you know, see what's going to happen. Now, Florida is very different than Texas. Texas, obviously, the big story is that the Democrat lawmakers have gone out of state, so they don't mm-hmm. have a quorum to do it. Florida doesn't have that same type of rule that Texas does. There, you know, if everybody fled to try to avoid the vote, that wouldn't happen because of the Republican supermajority that they have right now in the legislature. So that tactic won't work in Florida, but I'm sure that every side is gearing up for potential litigation on this. And that makes it really difficult for me as the supervisor of elections, because then I get stuck in this limbo. Are we redrawing precincts? Are we not? Waiting for court cases?
Sure.
I mean, we saw this in the last census, where after we went through and redistricted, we had to do the Senate district over again midway through the year because of the last, it was a 2020 census, and we had to do a mid-year redistricting just on the Senate districts because the court found them invalid.
The Florida Senate,
yes.
Okay, understand. Is there a difference between what the president has suggested? He wants a new census, and Governor DeSantis talking about not doing a new census, working off of existing data. How do you understand that dynamic?
So the redistricting that Florida is looking to do would use the exact same data that of the 2020 census. Now, DeSantis has said that he feels like the census should be done over as well. He feels that Florida was underreported and thought that Florida should have picked up an additional congressional seat.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was a lot of issues with the 2020 census.
So that part of this is not going to be done. It's not going to be trying to create a new seat. It's redistricting the seats we currently have.
Exactly. That's what Florida's looking to do. And then the president is looking to call for an entire new census. And to quote his Truth Social, they don't want to count anybody who is in the country without authorization. And there's some confusion because I've seen some posts that says that he doesn't want to count non-citizens, but that really is in the country without
He's distinguishing between people here legally and those who are illegally in the country.
Exactly. So we'll have to see. And he tried this when he in his first term, and the Supreme Court, you know, he wanted to ask the citizenship question on the census, and the mm-hmm. the Supreme Court overruled that and said he couldn't ask that. So
I'm wondering if that may not be a move just to get the issue back in front of the court and see what will happen at that point. It's been an interesting hour, Tim Bobanek. I appreciate you coming in and giving us a primer on all this election work. It's all the time going, isn't it?
It's nonstop. It's people, you know, they always ask, what does the supervisor do with elections when there's not an election going on? And we are just crazy busy right now between all of this.
Well, I used to kid Lori and you that you guys only work one day a year. What's the problem?
Absolutely not.
It goes much further than that. Well, there's a lot to be played out on this. We'll keep an eye on it. And again, thank you for taking your time, spending it with us here this weekend on the Florida Roundtable. Always good to see you.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
And we'll talk to all of you next week again here on the Florida News Network with our next edition of the Florida Roundtable.
You've been listening to the Florida Roundtable with Bill Meek on News and Public Affairs presentation of the Florida News Network. The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this station management, owners, or sponsors. For questions or concerns, contact Florida Roundtable at fnnonline.net.